Success breeds complacency. Complacency breeds failure. Only the paranoid survive. Andy Grove.
Welcome to Coach to Scale, how modern leaders build coaching cultures. I'm your host, Matt Benelli. Join me as we build a community of like-minded professionals who share the belief that effective coaching improves the performance of every team member. Our mission is to help leaders become better coaches. The Coach to Scale podcast is sponsored by Coachem, the world's first AI coaching execution platform that leverages evidence-based coaching to increase quota attainment. And with that, let's get started.
Today's guest is steadfast in never letting himself or his team succumb to complacency. Looking forward to peeling back the onion on that, but a bit about our guest for starters. He's devoted his career to mastering the craft of sales development. He spent a decade plus at Software AG. Currently, he's VP of Global Sales Development at Talkdesk. Justin Ottley, welcome to Coach to Scale.
Thanks, Matt. Super pumped to be here. Long time coming. I've had to reschedule on you a few times, but thanks for bearing in with me.
No worries. COVID continues to get the best of us. It's all right. You're back. I'm gonna jump right in, Justin. You've been doing this for a while, and as I mentioned, you have really devoted yourself to mastering the craft. I know that's a phrase that that resonates a lot with you. There's a lot of myths in our business, especially in the world of sales development. What's a myth about the SDR role that you believe is misguided or really complete BS?
Oof. So I might just go for the jugular on this one.
Do it, man. Do it. Don't wimp out.
There's definitely a really hot topic for me right now, and it is the SDR, the sales tech stack, right? What you need and what you don't need. And the hot topic for me in particular is definitely sales engagement platforms. I'm getting to the point where, you know, I've evaluated just about every single one of them. I've tried a lot of them, and they're all pissing me off more and more because, you know, none of them are actually mastering one particular thing, one particular piece of the process. It's this all-encompassing platform trying to do everything, but not doing any one particular thing that great or that good.
So Justin, just for the audience, and the audience is all the people that you and I have worked with for and around for a long time, technology, B2B SaaS, the Software AGs, the Talkdesks of the world. But when you say sales engagement platform, we're not trying to throw any companies under the bus here, but like, just can you describe what you mean when you say sales engagement platform, just a level set before you go into it?
Yeah, absolutely, right? It's that central place where you are managing for like an SDR team or from a marketing sales team where you're managing your cadences, your sequences that are going to be, you know, automated and sent out to your target market, right? Where that could be a series of emails, LinkedIn calls, you know, it's a way to organize it all together. So I was actually using Outreach since like, I think 2017 up until about 2023 or something like that. And it did what I needed it to do. But the problem with a lot of these different, and this isn't me attacking Outreach, because now there's all these up and coming companies that are trying to take Outreach and Sales Loft's lunch, where they've got some really good marketing. But then when you actually start to play with the platform, they're missing out on a lot. Right. And so where I'm getting at with a myth is that, look, you don't need the best tech stack. You don't need the most state-of-the-art tech stack. What's far, far, far more important and far more proven right now is the fundamentals. Right. I think as a company, as a team, as a leadership team, if you invest first in helping your sellers, your SDRs, master their fundamentals, that is going to drive way more results than any engagement platform, than any tech stack can. Because here's the problem. If you're not investing in your team's coaching and training the right way, and you go bring on this tech stack to try to automate everything, it's not going to fix everything because it's on a broken foundation.
So I love where you're going with this, and appreciate you just going for it. I have a couple of questions here. As somebody who gets in sequences and gets a shitload of emails, most of which I read like the first line and usually hit delete. And is it that we rely too much on the tool? Meaning the expectation is that it's going to do our job for us, like self-driving, like while we go sleep in the back seat. And it's not just, we don't use it to augment and support the fundamentals, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think people have just become far too reliant on these tools. And the problem is that, like, you know, the market is catching up with that. Everyone loves to ask that question, right? Like, what's going to happen to sales, to SDRs, to sellers with AI? Well, AI, many people have said it, so I'm not saying anything groundbreaking here, but AI is going to replace lazy sellers, lazy SDRs, right? Those not willing to put in the work and make it a good experience for their prospect or customer, those are the ones that are going to unfortunately pay the consequences, because they also make the rest of us who are putting in the work look bad.
Wait, you said it the best. It's AI is going to replace lazy sellers. I've had professors of business, professors of sales who said it, you know, very, very well, very articulately. I have Ben Kennedy, who is a seasoned sales leader, was on recently. He works at an AI type company, and he talked about the same thing. But you went, again, right for the jugular. It's going to replace lazy sellers. It's going to help professionals. It's going to be a tool to help them master their craft. Would that be fair?
Totally fair. And I can tell you that, you know, going into next year, me and my leadership team, our ops team over here at Talkdesk, what we're going to be looking at is going away from an all-encompassing sales engagement platform that does hundreds of things and really piece together our own, right? I want to go out and get the best dialer on the market that just does what it's supposed to do, right? It cycles through numbers, lets you know when numbers are starting to get burned, right? Produces a good optimal connect rate. And then the same thing for an emailer. I don't need something that does all of these things, not exceptionally well. So I want to go get an emailer, you know, best in breed, that does the same type of thing. Not overcomplicate it. Sure, we'll have our, you know, we'll have our data platform, something like Zoom Info, Sales Navigator, right? Like probably a conversational intelligence tool to coach the reps over the phones. But there's a lot of what these engagement platforms do that we don't actually need. And it's the way that these engagement platforms are designed are also helping to drive the wrong behaviors.
Right? What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, they were designed, you know, they were designed for what was working back in 2017, 18, 19, 20. And it was awesome. Right, what you could do, what you could plug in, the results you could get. You can still have a little bit of success that way, but what's also going to happen, you're going to ruin your company's domain. So your deliverability rates are going to start to fall through the floor. But you're also going to saturate your market in a bad way, because if you're not putting together the right kind of relevant message for each prospect, for each account, for each role, for each persona, they're going to start to have a bad taste of Talkdesk in their mouth. And I can't afford that, right? So, and even though there is a way to manage that within the engagement platform, I haven't found one yet that is ideal, that makes it ideal. They're just set up the wrong way. And so that's why we're going to move away from them.
So a couple of questions on that. I'm just going a little bit deeper on this.
Sure.
I get a lot of emails that, you know, the first line starts off with, I know you're busy nudging this to the top of your inbox. What do you think?
So you can do that, but you've got to add a little bit more color, right? So I'm not a big fan of those bump emails that can just be used for anyone. Make it some type of bump email that is relevant for that person. And if it's not relevant for that person, make it relevant for their company, right? So that they know this doesn't feel like something that was spread out to, you know, a couple thousand people.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm at the point where I want to strangle somebody when I get that, you know, maybe it's because I'm always trying to dig out. So when someone reminds me that I'm behind, it's like, who the hell are you?
That's a good point.
I'm not a big fan of that, but that's my perspective. What about the people that perhaps rely too much on the sequence, on the automated emails, and don't support that or augment that with personalized emails and say, I don't have the time for that?
I think that's where, you know, how your leaders are leading and managing the process comes into play, right? So it's also our job from an SDR leadership point, or whether it's sales leaders managing how their sellers are using these platforms, mixed with also ops and enablement, we've all got to be on the same page about what it is we're looking to, what kind of behaviors we're looking to drive and what kind of results we're looking to bring in. And if we ourselves are too lazy to go into these platforms to see what's actually happening, then we are really in no position to bitch and complain about it to begin with.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. The lessons learned question here. So what's a tough lesson you've learned along the way leading SDR teams? And maybe we covered it, but I'll just ask the question a little bit differently and see what you respond with.
I think for me, one of the first things that comes to mind is early on, I was coaching SDRs in the wrong areas. And what I mean by the wrong areas is I was just going off of face value what I thought was wrong. I was going off of my gut, but I didn't necessarily have any data or any relevant context to make that valid. So sometimes I was right, but the problem was when I was right, the way I was fixing it, it wasn't necessarily setting that person up for continuous success, or I wasn't doing it in a way that I was capturing it, documenting it, and then scaling it to the rest of the team just in case, right? So that would probably be the first one.
And so what have you done about it?
So through the help of one of my mentors, Kevin Dorsey, helped put together this, what we call like a issue diagnosis framework. And what I love about this issue diagnosis framework is it can be used for both uncovering where someone needs to be coached, but then on the flip side, and my favorite side is with an A player, it helps you uncover what it is they're doing exceptionally well. So I'll break down both real quick. The issue diagnosis framework is essentially, at least from an SDR standpoint, and you can make this for any role, you think about like every major component of the SDR role, right? Like your connect rates, your reply rates, your open rates, your meeting show rates, the conversion rates. So you've got to be documenting every single one of these, and you essentially create a checklist for every major topic. So if it's a show rate, for instance, if I know that our average show rate on the team, meaning, you know, a discovery call that I schedule with the prospect and the AE, and the percentage of them that are showing up, if I know that that's 75% across the team, but I have someone at 50, there's something wrong there. We have to dig in.
Right.
And if you just go and ask them, hey, what are you doing wrong? Right. They don't know. So you've got to have a checklist, a way to peel back layer by layer until you find something that is clearly a flag, right? Whether that be the subject line that they're sending in that meeting invite, whether it be how they're setting expectations on that cold call. Are they following up with the prospect? When are they following up with the prospect? Mm-hmm. What are they saying? How far out are they scheduling these calls? You've got to have every possible scenario and detail in there, right? And that's when you can continue to peel back and figure out, okay, this is what's wrong. And now here's how we're going to fix it. And then on the flip side with A players, what's really fun is, you know, one thing I learned with A players is you can't just go to an A player or superstar and say, hey, you know, what are you doing that's so great? Most of the time they don't actually know, right? And they don't know because a lot of what they do has become just like a subconscious habit. We're all great at something, and whatever that is has become some kind of subconscious habit. We might not know what we're doing differently compared to other people. So it's our job as leaders to dig in. So you use that issue diagnosis framework and you flip it on its head and you use it as essentially an interview guide. Like, okay, you have a 90% show rate consistently. I have got to figure out what's happening. I'm going to put an hour on your calendar at least and see if I can't figure out why. And then from there, what we can do, once we uncover what that is, I can document that, I can process that, and now I can scale it to the rest of the team.
So there's two parts of that. So when you say there's A players, so let's just also assume there's B players and maybe C players. When you ask the A player, what are you doing well? A lot of these folks are still newer in their career, right? And they're like, I don't know. And even if they do know, they might be a little hesitant to brag because they think it's bragging. Conversely, a friend of mine's son was an SDR, and his manager kept saying, "You got to get your numbers up. You got to do a better job." And he's like, the kid's like, "What do you mean? I know, but how?" He's like, "I don't know what I'm doing wrong."
Right.
So A players don't know what they're doing right, and C players don't know what they're doing wrong all the time. And I think this issue diagnosis framework helps with both.
And as a leader, when you have someone coming to you begging for your help and you don't know how to help them because you yourself are not quite sure what is wrong, that's a shitty feeling. Like, you feel defeated. You feel like you're failing them. And I have been there. And so that's why I am so grateful for Kevin Dorsey, for Katie, for creating this. I took it, kind of made it my own. It's fun. And I highly, highly recommend people give it a try.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. Justin, how do you decide where you spend your time? And how do you work with your leaders on where they spend their time?
So I can tell you that, you know, when I was an SDR manager, and this goes back of this last part of our conversation with A players, was I'd say for the first three quarters of my career as a direct SDR manager, I spent majority of my time with the B players and C players trying to get them like the A players. The problem is that I was just relying on the A players to do what they do. Now, there's two issues with that. The A players are usually with you for a finite amount of time. They're not going to be on your team very long if they are doing it right and you're doing it right. And then when they're off your team, everything that was in their head that made them an A player is now gone. And how are you going to take that and help the rest of your folks? Right. So it was Kevin Dorsey. It was my other mentor, Ralph Barcy, who had challenged me, spend more time with your A players, which will then impact and benefit your B players and your C players. So for me, that's the biggest thing. And then when I'm talking to my leaders, and if they're coming to me and I'm seeing how much time they're spending with someone, but the behavior is not changing, the results not changing. First of all, you know, it was told to me one time, you know, you're never going to regret moving on from the wrong person too soon. Right. And that is very true. So there's going to be some coaching there, but then the other piece is just making sure I'm protecting my SDR leader's time and urging them and coaching them what to do with the A players, how to spend that time, and then take those learnings, take those findings, and make your coaching with the B players and C players much more impactful.
Hmm. So recently had Brent Adamson, a co-author of The Challenger Sale and The Challenger Customer, on the program, and his point, his outlook on this was, you coach your A players for retention. I mean, like, you know, challenge them, you know, keep them, so they keep them engaged so they don't feel left out and leave. So, and then you coach your B players, which represent 60-70+% of your team, for productivity and growth. Yeah. And from the C players, borrowing what another guest said, which is you coach your C players, meaning to make a quick decision, whether right. they can be coached up or coached out.
Love that.
How does that align with what your framework is?
I think it makes a lot of sense. It aligns well. I think an A player slash like a superstar caliber SDR is a little bit different than an A player superstar caliber of, say, for instance, an AE, mm-hmm. right? Because it goes back to those A player SDRs are not going to be on your team very long unless you know, you come across someone that loves the lifestyle and the work of an SDR and they want to make a career out of it, which, by the way, I have zero issues with. But it aligns pretty well, but you just, as a leader, you have to keep in mind how long these folks are on your team. And with the A players, right, it's like it's the real value there is not necessarily the numbers in the pipeline and the results they're producing. It's that lasting ripple effect that they have, which is going to have an incredible compound effect on your numbers in the future.
Mm. We had Dr. Howard Dover, who runs the sales program at the University of Texas at Dallas. And he was talking about one of the biggest challenges with leading an SDR team is the fact that oftentimes it is a pit stop, meaning you have right. them for a year. It was Calipari, the coach of Kentucky, University of Kentucky. These players come there for 1 year. And then they, yeah. you know, go to the pros, and that's the whole program. And he's built his program based on that and knowing that. Justin, what's a mantra, axiom, or belief that guides you?
All right, so there's two, and it's not a coincidence that they're on my LinkedIn. So the first one is a Steve Prefontaine quote: "To give anything less than your best is to sacrifice the gift." It brings chills to me every time I say it and think about it. And then the second one is from a ancient Stoic philosopher, Epictetus: "How long are you going to wait before you start demanding the best for yourself?" So what I love about both those quotes is that they're both extremely applicable in every single aspect of your life, right? Like how to give anything less than your best is to sacrifice the gift. Your marriage, your relationship with your kids, like how you are as a parent, you know, your personal health, your personal fitness, who you are as an individual contributor, as a leader at work, everything, right? So I'm a big believer that we're all given a set of God-given strengths and talents. And, you know, it's up to good leaders to help uncover what that is in people and really help that shine. I love the, you know, the mindset of that. You know, everyone on the team is better at something than everyone else. Mm-hmm. So again, it's my job as a leader to uncover what that is and make sure those strengths, those gifts are not being taken advantage for, right?
Yeah, I was listening to a book that has nothing to do with sales or business. And one of the lines in it was, I think referencing a Greek philosopher, was paraphrasing, "You're doing a great job, but there's still room for improvement." Yeah. And that ties back into the Epictetus quote. I think I really like that. So we talk about in any role, really, skills and metrics. What's the difference, and how's the coaching different in terms of skills development versus metrics achievement?
Well, I think
that's a big pivot from Epictetus, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you build the metrics based on the skills you're looking to drive, right? So one thing I am not a fan of is sales teams or SDR teams that are given daily and weekly metrics and no one really knows the math behind, because usually there's no math behind those metrics. So many times it's 50 calls a day, 100 or 200 emails a day, you know, 25, 50 LinkedIn touches a day. Well, here's my challenge to that. Each individual rep is different from every other rep. What if someone from a call standpoint, they have a much higher connect rate because of, you know, the time they're spending in building their list, who they're adding to their list, and then their efficiency, their conversion rate over the phone is much higher. So you know, to hit that certain quota that you're trying to achieve, they might not have to make the 50 calls a day. They could actually do it in 30. The beauty is when you get them consistently better at connect rates and conversion rates, oftentimes they don't want to make less calls. They want to make more. But I'm probably going on a bit of a tangent there. And the reason is because we're in the midst over here of creating this metric framework that is personalized for each individual SDR, right? So we show them, but first we have to collect enough data to do it. We're on a new platform at the moment. And I wanted to get, you know, at least 2 to 3 quarters of data under our belts, but essentially being able to reverse engineer how to hit your quota purely from calling. Based on your connect rates, based on your conversion rates, based on your meeting show rate, and based on what happens on those meetings, how many of them are going into, you know, the pipeline. And what's awesome about that is that once you show them the math on how to do it, you can give them the ownership on how to go find it themselves. And I'm not a big believer in the daily metrics. So what we ask them to come back with is like, okay, I have to make X amount of calls per week to hit my quota. And what's cool about it is that's based on my data. And the other beautiful part about that is I can influence that data. I can make that data go in my favor by getting extra coaching to be better over the phones. If I can increase my conversion rate by 2 or 3%, I can make this many less calls per week. And then I can start spending more time in these areas.
So, I'm assuming you've heard this at some point in your career of leading SDR teams, something along the lines of, hey, Justin, I don't know, man, I'm making all the calls. I'm sending all the emails. I don't know why I'm at 50% of what's expected. I'm doing everything I can do. What do you say to that person?
Well, before they tell me that, I should probably have an idea of how true that is or that isn't, right? I think we've all heard it when someone is putting in the effort and the activity, but they're not getting the results, I can work with that. I can coach that.
Yeah.
When someone's not putting in the effort and the activity and they're not getting the results, that's where we need to dig in and understand why. And to your point earlier with the C player, it's like, okay, we need to either quickly coach up or coach out.
This is a tough question to answer. I recognize that. What percentage of the time do you see people putting in all of the work and failing miserably? Like, not missing a little bit. Like, everybody, that happens, right? But missing big consistently.
I don't know that I've ever seen it. When someone's putting in all of the work, because when I think all of the work, I'm not just thinking of high numbers. I'm thinking of, you know, if you have the right training and enablement backing all of this, all of the work means, you know, your process leading up to that. Are you doing all the things that you have been coached to do?
Okay.
Right? Are you listening to coaching and going and applying it? Or are you just listening to it and then sitting on it and thinking about it and coming back to it later? For me, it's, I don't have a percentage. It's pretty rare. But it does happen where someone's putting in a wild amount of activity, getting very little results. And we're not just talking about blasting emails, but making a ton of calls. But that is such a huge coaching opportunity. It's like, we have someone who is so hungry, who's so driven, who's putting in all the work. Like, if there was ever someone to spend extra attention and coaching time on with your issue diagnosis framework, now is the time. That is the person.
So in essence, they've earned your time, right? So like a lot of times, the way I've heard it said is folks who are struggling, they need to show that they're putting in the work to at least earn your time, earn the coaching. But if you're not putting in the time, you can't coach that, or it's certainly much harder.
Yeah, well said.
In our prep call, I had in my notes, you talked about something. There's a difference between a coaching plan and a pit. if I may not have that right, but what are your thoughts there?
So my thoughts there, again, this goes back to many trials and errors, many mistakes I've made in my career of letting someone get to the point where a PIP is necessary. But at what point did they start to plateau, right? At what point did their numbers start to dip? And when did you get involved and what did you do to fix that? So I think too often for me, it got to the point early in my career, and it's not like I did a whole bunch of PIPs and letting go of people, but—
By the way, sorry, PIP, performance improvement plan for—
Correct.
I think everyone knows that, but let's just level set. Go ahead.
Correct. But you know, if you put someone on a PIP and they don't meet it and you've got to manage them out, you know, especially early on in your career as a leader, that's a difficult conversation to have. No one wants to have that conversation. You feel like you failed them as a leader. You also feel like you did a poor job and maybe potentially finding the right person. So the way I look at coaching plans is, first of all, let's ensure that each individual SDR, unless they are absolutely crushing it, they have their own type of like metric improvement plan. And you know, they're getting the time and attention they need as soon as something starts to plateau. As soon as something starts to dip, that is where we step in and we create a real plan to ensure this doesn't turn into something where we have to come close to managing them out.
Yeah.
Because we know how expensive that is. We know that there's now going to be a gap between managing someone out, hiring someone, when they're onboarded. No one wants to have to go through that.
Yeah. Catch the problem early. And you can, then you can do something about it. Yeah, a lot of people I hear, and there's a lot of books written out there saying the phone is dead. You know, calling is dead. What's your thought on that?
That's bullshit said by people that don't know what they're talking about. I think it's becoming more and more relevant than ever before. I think emailing, regardless of the best messenger, like regardless of how good you are at the art of, of crafting really great words and really good copywriting, it is harder and harder than ever before to land in someone's inbox from a deliverability standpoint. And it's also, once you're in their inbox, it is way more competitive to get their attention than it is over the phones. There is obviously the industry of sales development has exploded, and the easy thing, we all know, it's way easier and it's way less fearful to send an email. So that's why so many more people are doing it. And that's also why calling is becoming more and more of an opportunity if you're doing it the right way. So,
no. Well, the same people who buy, you know, the book Cold Calling is Dead, or the same people who buy the book of the, you know, 2 minute abs and, you know, lose 40 pounds in 4 days. We all want it to be true. I mean, that'd be great. Right. Totally get it. So sounds like your team makes, outbound calls.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Can you share some numbers? You know, I get asked this a lot. I just kind of go from what I hear and, you know, what I read is the industry standard, but for, you know, an SDR team, like an average SDR, how many calls a week are you requiring your team to be making minimally?
Well, again, it goes back to this new metric framework, which is going to be different per individual. Mm-hmm. But then what about someone new that doesn't have any of that data? What does that need to be at? So I think if it needs to be at least 200 a week, mm-hmm. but you also have to look at and be able to measure what kind of success your other channels are producing. So email, LinkedIn, direct mail, video. First of all, you've got to have a way to track that in Salesforce to know like what's driving results. Because I can tell you that when I started at Talkdesk, we were a very inbound reliant organization.
Yeah.
And we also leaned much heavier on our messaging. Our messaging needed a lot of improvement as well. Mm-hmm. So we weren't doing ourselves a whole lot of favors, you know, shying from the phone, leaning on messaging that needed a refresher. Right. So, yeah, I could go on this topic for a long time, but, pause.
Pick up the damn phone in addition to leveraging the other channels as well. Right. It's not one or the other. It's all omnichannel.
Yeah. And if we have someone that is crushing their number through calls only, I don't care if they ever send a single email or LinkedIn. And on the flip side, if we have someone who comes in here real quickly and starts making a splash with their messaging through, like, we've got some really strong social sellers on this team who are hitting majority of their target through LinkedIn alone. I don't have a problem with that at all. All right. If they can continue that consistency, my only problem that I will eventually have is if they're poor over the phones and they're avoiding it, I can in good conscience promote them up into the organization, knowing that there's something they're not investing in and that will inevitably catch up to bite them in the ass.
Yeah. You know, other organizations that I've worked with in the past implement something that has what they call minimum committed behaviors, meaning that even if you're crushing it on social and, you know, email, you're still required to make X number of calls a week because you got to keep that muscle going. Because A, you might need it for that next role that you want to go. And then B, you know, I can't tell you how many organizations I've been brought in and my company's been brought in over the last 10, 11, 12 years where inbound dried up. Now, all of a sudden, you know, we need to pick up the phone and those muscles either were never developed or have atrophied.
Yeah, it's a great point. I really like the concept of that.
Career pathing. I touched on the fact that that one of the challenges of leading SDR teams is that it's often a pit stop onto another role for a lot of people, which makes it difficult to manage. How do you handle career pathing?
So the question you're asking is, how do I build the career path, or how do I manage that the short stints that I have with people?
Well, I guess maybe a little bit of both. Let's start with, how do you manage your organization knowing that there's a turnstile there for mostly good reasons, I trust. Yeah.
Okay, so this is when mastering your craft comes into play. And this is a conversation I try to have with every single SDR that I even interview, the ones that were, you know, seriously considering, this is an expectation I want to set, not on day one, but day zero before they're even here, is do not be in a rush to get off this team, right? Like we're all working towards things. Maybe there's some exceptional things you're looking to pay off, you're looking to do. That's why you need the double OTE for the AE route. But just like I had just told you, the worst thing I can do as a leader, one of the worst things I can do as a leader is prematurely champion someone and promote them up internally when I know that there are areas that they have not invested in themselves that need some serious improvement, right? So do not be in a rush. Have the mindset of mastering your craft. We don't have enough people in sales that have that mindset. Just like I think I gave you this example, like, an electrician, you better be a master of your craft. Otherwise, you could kill yourself or someone else accidentally. And even though those are different circumstances, why should it be any different for our profession? If we think about the impact we have on our prospects, our customers, our team, our company, and then also ourselves. So do it right. Take your time. This is a role, especially in SDR land, there are so many incredible skills and behaviors you can pick up that will that are applicable to almost any type of opportunity you're looking to pursue down the road. I mean, look how many of these thought leaders out there. Like, you've got Kyle Coleman, who's a CMO, previous SDR, right? Like Kevin Dorsey, who I was just talking about, SVP of sales, previous SDR. You've got SDRs going and founding tons of different companies. It's incredible. And it's the skill set you learn. Even though we were talking about the beauty of the phones, I am a word nerd to my heart. I love spending time and crafting good messaging, right? And that art of copywriting and the art of being a good writer and to be able to clarify your thought on paper, that is such an important skill that can be used everywhere, right? So I get a little fiery about that topic.
You brought up something that I think is important to internalize, which is if you stand behind somebody that knowingly hasn't quote unquote mastered their craft and you sponsor them for promotion, you're going to tarnish not only your personal brand, but the brand of your team with the folks that would be hiring from your ranks, right?
Bingo.
So this gets to the point of the relationship with, let's say, the AE sales leadership team. How important is that and how do you work with them?
Yeah, it is so vital because, you know, one of the very first things I did when I came to Talkdesk was, you know, we had a bit of a broken career path. There wasn't a single SDR on this team that had ever seen an SDR be promoted, right? And part of that was our alignment between our SDR leadership and our sales leaders was not great. So the first thing I had to do was I needed our sales leaders to buy in to what I was putting down pretty quickly. Because if I'm a sales leader and I don't believe in that SDR leadership team and who they are hiring, how they are training them, how they are readying them to become an AE, why the hell would I want any of their folks on my team? I wouldn't. So I had to create that buy-in with them pretty fast of like, hey, here's what we're doing to change the ICP of the type of talent we're looking to bring in, okay? Here's what we're doing once we bring them in. We're changing the face of their onboarding the first 30, 60, 90 days. Here's what we're doing to ensure that they're going to produce consistent results for you and your team. And then here's what we're doing to get them ready from like an SDR to AE readiness standpoint, right? Like how we're going to stretch them, how we're going to prepare them so that when they come to your team on day one, you've got someone that I love to talk about that has mastered the five P's that no external candidate can compete with, right? So they have mastered our people at Talkdesk, right? I shouldn't say our, because we're talking to other people, right? But they've mastered our internal people. They've mastered our internal processes. They've mastered our prospects/personas. They've mastered the problems that we solve for them. And then they've mastered the product that solves those problems. No external candidate can compete with that. They can't. No matter how much selling they have, if you've got someone that has truly mastered those five P's, as a leader, I would much rather coach someone who has proven tenacious, proven culturally the right fit, proven to be coachable. I'd rather coach them on the back half of the process they don't know, that's right, mm-hmm. qualifying and closing a deal, versus an experienced seller. Do I really want to spend time on the five P's with them? Most sales leaders don't want to do that. They rely on their onboarding.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like if a sales leader knows that somebody has mastered those, they have confidence in that, as long as it's close to equal, they're going to go with the person who's mastered those five P's all day long. So your talk track could be, hey guys, hey gals, it's yours to lose. If you do this, you're in great shape. If you don't, right. You're not. Right.
Yeah.
What's a common, and maybe it's this, maybe it's the five P's, but maybe if you could put a fine point on it, what's a common trait that you see in SDRs that were on your team that were promoted and successful as AEs? What's a common trait that you saw that they possessed while they were on your team?
Just one? Cause there's a lot.
Well, a couple, like, but just, you know, top of mind.
So, I mean, look, okay. So top of mind, I would say that these are hands down the most resourceful and curious individuals we have on our team. So when I say resourceful, they're throughout onboarding, these are the folks that are asking the most questions, hands down, right? They know that asking questions whether they know it or they don't, right? That asking questions is a strength and not a weakness. It doesn't matter. They're not willing to let any one thing or person be an obstacle to their success, right? So they start to that's when they start to master our internal people, who to go to for what. They start to master our internal processes, how to do what, and right, like what works. So, and then from a curiosity standpoint, these are the folks that once they start to experience success, they're not stopping, and they're not stopping the little things that got them to where they were in the first place, right? So, and then even if they do stop, if we give them that coaching and remind them, these are the folks that are super tenacious about their personal and professional development, because they not only want to master their craft for this role, they're looking to master their craft the best way for the next role, right? Yeah. So I obviously threw in the word tenacity there. At the end of the day, when I'm interviewing an SDR, I can tell you that that tenacity, it's really hard to measure on paper, but it's really something that I've got to feel pretty quickly, the type of energy someone is putting off and how genuine that is. Because anyone can put off like a fake tenacity, but then once you're in the role, you know, the way I look at tenacity is like the willingness, you know, what kind of lengths are you willing to go to set out and achieve the targets and your goals personally, professionally, that you want to achieve?
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you're hiring, salespeople into your role as SDRs. And so if they're halfway good, they know how to get through an interview. So you got to figure out, you know, what's real when you peel back the onion, scratch the surface a little bit. Makes a ton of sense. So let's pivot just a little bit. You're at Talkdesk. You run the sales development org globally. What does Talkdesk do, and what do you love about being there?
So Talkdesk is in a $30 billion industry, the CCaaS industry, which is contact center as a service. The way you can think of what a contact center is, or really what separates Talkdesk, is we're helping companies deliver a true like AI-powered modern customer service platform their way. And as far as what I love about Talkdesk, this was a big change for me, because you noted in the beginning that I was at Software AG for over 10 years. I was there for my entire true professional career. But with Talkdesk, for me, it was about the leadership team in place. That was by far the most important thing to me. And it became evidently clear through the interview process with Talkdesk that, you know, the number one thing I was looking for was autonomy to do what I think is best for my team at a global function. That's what I was really seeking. And that is what I felt through every single interview with every leader they put me in front of, was that this place lets its leaders lead, right? There is a clear mission that we're all working towards at this company. And they have changed the absolute face of the leadership team here for the better. And these are people that, you know, are high energy, that are passionate about building and fixing problems. And yeah, it just kind of felt like all my favorite leaders that I ever worked with at the same place, at the same time, all in agreement and alignment and working towards the same goal.
Yeah, so that's awesome. I mean, look, I don't know anything about Software AG other than it's been around for a while. It's a bigger company, but sometimes these bigger companies, they don't put as much stock in the SDR team as they should, and it's a second class citizen in too many companies. But it sounds like with Talkdesk, there's value there, and you feel like you have a seat at the table.
Yeah, and what's great is the SDRs do as well.
Yeah,
right? They feel the same way. So
that is super, super important. So the podcast is Coach to Scale. We talk a lot about coaching. Justin, who's your favorite coach?
I would have to say, so I'm a Washington sports fan, born and raised through good and bad, mostly bad, but there were some good.
How's that working out for you? Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough, but I can say from a Washington football standpoint, there's Coach Joe Gibbs.
All right.
Who led us to multiple Super Bowls. I've even had the pleasure of somewhat meeting him, being able to see him in person and how he interacts with people. One thing that stands out to me about Joe Gibbs is that he's not a very overpowering individual. And if you've ever heard him speak, it's definitely not an overpowering voice. It's kind of a high voice, but it's the way he intently listens to people. It's the way he lets his leaders lead, right? It's not just being a player's coach, but also calling people out on their shit. I really love and respect that about him.
So what is something, if you played for Joe Gibbs, if you can imagine that, what is something that you would never, ever do or say in front of that man?
Probably, that's such a great question. I love that. Probably make an excuse for why I didn't do my job. I have a feeling that would go over pretty terribly. Not someone who had probably had a lot of patience for, he, similar to like Belichick, is, someone who really, or like Nick Saban, who preaches like the process, focus on the process, not the end goal, but what's in front of you. And if you are not doing your specific role in the greater whole of the process and where that's taking you, and if you also have excuses for why you're not doing it, it's not going to go over well. So I wouldn't dare do that.
My drill instructor in the Marines, I don't know if he didn't have us memorize this, but he said it so many times that we memorized it. He said, excuses are tools used by the incompetent that build obstacles to nothing and roads to nowhere. And those who sell at excuses seldom excel at anything else. And wow. He said it. Yeah, there were a bunch of F-bombs laced in there that I omitted, but so as someone who's so eloquent and so thoughtful about coaching and developing people and putting a system in place to do so, my guess is that you had good coaching modeled for you somewhere along the way. Can you talk about a coach that you had, someone who mentored you, coached you, that had an impact on your career?
It's hard to point out one. To your point, I've been really blessed to have multiple and a lot of different types. The one who hired me at Software AG was definitely much more direct, which worked for me. I think it turned off plenty of people, but for me, being called out directly and not really focusing too much on like the, making sure it's a soft delivery, it got under my, a lot of times it would get under my skin. He would piss me off, but he knew what motivated me and he knew that he could with me. So he didn't push me too far, or too hard. Right. And then, I've had it's hard to point out one. I've had a number of leaders that were really good at leading with love and not just because they're saying it, right? But it's in their actions. It's the way they communicate with me. But then ensuring that doesn't get, taken advantage of, where they're still comfortable to call me out. Because I think that was a lesson for me early on is thinking of it like Michael Scott from The Office. My first year as a manager, I just wanted to be everyone's friend. I wanted everyone to like me. Yeah. And that is such a terrible, terrible approach. And it was my next leader who blew that up in my face and was like, here's how you actually manage. It's cool to like want to be liked, but here's why you're going to fail if you continue to do that. And here's how we're going to change that.
That's such a theme throughout the guests that have been on this show. They've said what you've just said very directly or even indirectly. That it basically got to the point that if you want to be liked, you're going to struggle in this business. Curious, do you use assessments to assess for that need for approval by any chance?
Not enough. So we had done it a number of times at Software EG. We haven't done it yet here at Talkdesk. If there's anything you recommend, I'm all ears, but it's something I'm totally open to.
Yeah. It has the connection. There's a connection between that and success. It doesn't mean that you can't be coached through it, but you know, the individual needs to be aware that you're wired that way. And then your leadership needs to know how to coach you through that and hold you accountable. Yeah. It ain't easy. All right. So as we close out here, Justin, if someone heard something that they really liked, or, you know, Talkdesk sounded really familiar, really interesting, like, hey, I'd love to work there. What's a good way to reach out to you and connect with you?
Yeah, I would say don't just rely on LinkedIn and mail. You know, so many people talk about it, but my end mail is very difficult to navigate from, you know, all the people trying, you know, all the sellers trying to sell me, to all the candidates trying to get attention. So if you really want to stand out, don't purely just rely on LinkedIn, you know, whether you're looking for help or whether you are looking for a job, right? Like, make it a little bit easier for me to see your name, to respond. And so hit me up on LinkedIn, message me, right? Also email me. It's justin.otley@talkdesk.com. Pretty straightforward. Put some thought in behind like what your message is. It's something I totally appreciate, right? If you put that time and attention in, if I see that message and I can respond, I'm going to give you the time and attention back.
If someone, there's a lot of different ways to get in touch with people these days. If someone sent you, if you saw, you know, maybe, you know, there's all different videos that you can email these days, a video, and, you know, that person had, you could see their tenacity, you could see how they message, you could see their energy. And they would you consider that differentiating themselves if they sent you a video saying, hey, you know, I want to work for you, here's why, blah, 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 versus just a really well-crafted email?
Yeah, I've done a few different little experiments over all these openings we've had, and I can say less than 2% of all the candidates that reach out to us send a video. Less than 2% of candidates that are reaching out to us are sending video. That's astounding. So when we see a video, most of the time it gets watched. If I see that a video was sent to me through LinkedIn or through email, if I open up the message, I'm going to watch that video.
Yeah.
Right. Like, especially if it shows me it's only like 30 seconds or 45 seconds.
3.5 minutes, 10 minutes. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Talkdesk, you hiring?
We are. We're hiring. This is a big growth phase for Talkdesk right now, but growth done in a very strategic, well thought out, methodical, and mathematical way. So there's a lot of AE openings that people can go look at. We've got SE openings. There's a lot of CSM openings to come naturally on the SDR team. We've got openings. We're also looking to build our first in-person office since COVID, when Talkdesk dumped a lot of its real estate. Now we're looking to build an on-site SDR team. We're really excited. It's going to be in Tysons Corner, Virginia, which is only 40 minutes from me, which means I'll be going into the office.
Coincidentally. Yeah,
exactly. We have remote roles open, but right now the big focus is filling this office with the right people. And what we're excited about is this doesn't just need to be like, oh, if I want this job at Talkdesk, I got to go move to Tysons Corner and that's going to be my new home. Our goal is to make this a short-term home for 12 to 18 months, coach you up, train you up, get you to your next role. Then you can move again. You can move based on your role or you can move back home. But this is going to be a place where, you know, people experience, you know, a sales floor done the right way.
Awesome. And I just curious, I get asked this question a lot, you know, people that I know, my friends, my colleagues, they say, hey, you know anyone who's hiring interns, like summer interns, like that type of thing? Does Talkdesk do that?
Awesome timing, Matt. Yes. So we're starting our first ever intern program right now For the SDR team, I'll be hiring probably roughly 5 interns. And we're also trying to get all these interns out of this Tyson's office so that they're together. And then we're starting an intern program for other departments in the company as well. And also trying to get as many of those folks to this office as possible. And then the goal there is to create our next bench of talent at Talkdesk, right? If I promote an SDR up, who am I going to backfill that SDR with?
Yep.
Hello, intern.
Yep. No. Smart. There's a path of success there for doing that. So I think that's a really good place to leave it. Justin, I really enjoyed the conversation. I could feel your energy come through. And I think you left the audience with a lot of actionable nuggets, and you did it in an interesting way. So, you know, we talked about, we went from Epictetus. We talked about the importance of show rates and how to coach, diagnose before you coach. We talked about mastering your craft. So covered a lot of ground. Really appreciate that. Thank you for your time today.
Yeah. Appreciate you, Matt. This was great.
And for everybody out there watching and listening, thank you for doing that. We hope you enjoy what we're putting out there. When you consume this, wherever it is, YouTube, Spotify, hit that like button. If you like it, tell us what you like. Engage online. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Tell us what you'd like to see more of. We're looking to provide content in a way that's useful, actionable, and interesting. So let us know how we can do better. And until next time, coach them if you want to keep them.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Coach to Scale, How Modern Leaders Build Coaching Cultures. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at coachem.io. That's coachem.io. And follow us on Twitter at coachemnow. See you all next week. Thanks for joining. And remember, coach them if you want to keep them.